Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, June 22nd, 2026. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening in over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, consider taking our 90-hour court access in the common law course. You can find the link on our front page and in the description below. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. We also have Bible studies every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in this dot meeting room. Okay, we're going to get tonight's scriptures. We're going to be looking at, I believe, Acts chapter 2. If I can find it, hang on a minute. There it is. Okay, Acts chapter 2, read by Alexander Scorby. I can get it going. There it is.
Chapter 2. And when the day of Pentecost was fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. And suddenly there came a sound from heaven as of a rushing mighty wind, and it filled all the house where they were sitting. And there appeared unto them cloven tongues like as of fire, and it sat upon each of them. And they were all filled with the Holy Ghost, and began to speak with other tongues, as the Spirit gave them utterance. And there were dwelling at Jerusalem Jews, devout men, out of every nation under heaven. Now when this was noised abroad, the multitude came together, and were confounded, because that every man heard them speak in his own language. And they were all amazed and marveled, saying one to another, Behold, are not all these which speak Galileans? And how hear we every man in our own tongue, wherein we were born? Parthians, and Medes, and Elamites, and the dwellers in Mesopotamia, and in Judea, and Cappadocia, in Pontus, and Asia, Phrygia, and Pamphylia, in Egypt, and in the parts of Libya about Cyrene, and strangers of Rome, Jews and proselytes, Cretes and Arabians, we do hear them speak in our tongues the wonderful works of God. And they were all amazed, and were in doubt, saying one to another, What meaneth this? Others, mocking, said, These men are full of new wine. But Peter, standing up with the 11, lifted up his voice and said unto them, Ye men of Judea, and all ye that dwell at Jerusalem, be this known unto you, and hearken to my words. For these are not drunken, as ye suppose, seeing it is but the third hour of the day. But this is that which was spoken by the prophet Joel. And it shall come to pass in the last days, saith God, I will pour out of my Spirit upon all flesh. And your sons and your daughters shall prophesy. And your young men shall see visions. And your old men shall dream dreams. And on my servants and on my handmaidens I will pour out in those days of my Spirit, and they shall prophesy. And I will show wonders in heaven above, and signs in the earth beneath, blood and fire and vapor of smoke. The sun shall be turned into darkness, and the moon into blood, before that great and notable day of the Lord come. And it shall come to pass that whosoever shall call on the name of the Lord shall be saved. Ye men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God among you by miracles and wonders and signs, which God did by him in the midst of you, as ye yourselves also know. Him, being delivered by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God, ye have taken, and by wicked hands have crucified and slain, whom God hath raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be holden of it. For David speaketh concerning him, I foresaw the Lord always before my face, for he is on my right hand, that I should not be moved. Therefore did my heart rejoice, and my tongue was glad. Moreover also my flesh shall rest in hope. because thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption. Thou hast made known to me the ways of life. Thou shalt make me full of joy with thy countenance. Men and brethren, let me freely speak unto you of the patriarch David, that he is both dead and buried, and his sepulchre is with us unto this day. Therefore, being a prophet, and knowing that God had sworn with an oath to him that of the fruit of his loins, according to the flesh, he would raise up Christ to sit on his throne, he, seeing this before, spake of the resurrection of Christ, that his soul was not left in hell, neither his flesh did see corruption. This Jesus hath God raised up, whereof we all are witnesses. Therefore, being by the right hand of God exalted, and having received of the Father the promise of the Holy Ghost, he hath shed forth this which ye now see and hear. For David is not ascended into the heavens, but he saith himself, The Lord said unto my Lord, Sit thou on my right hand until I make thy foes thy footstool. Therefore, let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God hath made that same Jesus whom ye have crucified, both Lord and Christ. Now when they heard this, they were pricked in their heart, and said unto Peter and to the rest of the apostles, Men and brethren, what shall we do? Then Peter said unto them, Repent, and be baptized every one of you in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of sins, and ye shall receive the gift of the Holy Ghost. For the promise is unto you, and to your children, and to all that are afar off, even as many as the Lord our God shall call. And with many other words did he testify and exhort, saying, Save yourselves from this untoward generation. Then they that gladly received his word were baptized, and the same day there were added unto them about 3,000 souls. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, and in breaking of bread and in prayers. And fear came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were done by the apostles. And all that believed were together, and had all things common, and sold their possessions and goods, and parted them to all men, as every man had need. And they, continuing daily with one accord in the temple, and breaking bread from house to house, did eat their meat with gladness and singleness of heart, praising God, and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to the church daily such as should be saved.
Okay, the queue is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6 and a 1 if you're on a phone, and should be a button there if you're on an app or a browser to get into the queue. Jan, is that you here? Or is that Terry? Not hearing anything. I know you, Jan, you've been having some problems. There you go. Yep, I know you've been having some problems trying to get things going, but anyway, we can. Hey, have you thought about stepping back to 10 from 11?
No, I have not done that yet. I'm looking at some other things that you can do to 11.
Yeah, you're not going to get anywhere with it. They really, really tightened that one up. And anything you do, they'll know, and they'll reverse it. Or they'll put you to a position where they close everything down like they did to me. All my Word programs, nothing would work as soon as they see the role. But anyway, let me know if you want to make that changeover, and I'll send you a copy.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay, do we have any questions or anything?
Questions? I have none. I have a couple announcements.
Okay.
We've talked about the Red Pill Expo a number of times. That's coming up in July 11th and 12th. And it's free. All you have to do is register and get a link to get on so you can listen to all the presentations for the 2 days. And it's also free for a month after if you want to go back and re-listen or if you missed some of the talks. They have an interesting bunch of speakers. I'll give you a few of them. I'm sure you're all familiar with Brian Artis. He's kind of the ultimate mythbuster on pharmaceutical medications. You know, they laughed at him when he said many drugs were designed to imitate snake venom, and they scoffed when he said nicotine is not addictive. And that addiction comes from flavor chemicals added to cigarettes, and that nicotine is a barrier to COVID-related illnesses. That's why they put out smoking, anti-smoking campaigns during the COVID problem, because the people that were smoking weren't getting it. But they went silent when he was shown to be right on all accounts. And now he's going to be talking about cancer and what you can do about cancer. Very interesting. I'm looking forward to that one. Another fellow is Michael Yon. I don't know. I assume most of you know about Michael Yon. He's known for his up-close news reporting of military conflicts. He was a Green Beret, and Special Forces training equipped him with skills for observation and survival in dangerous environments. After the military, he became a civilian reporter and embedded with British and American troops in Iraq, and he's now considered by many to be the world's last standing independent combat correspondent. His topic is going to be the global famine dead ahead. Alex Jones will be there, and he's always controversial. So who knows what he will come up with. He hasn't given anybody a clue yet as what his topic is going to be. There's a gal, Michelle Melendez, who I think would be very interesting. I'm going to listen to her. She has extensive knowledge of directed energy weapons, which cause the wildfires. She has shown how destruction of rural communities is followed by plans to, surprise, surprise, acquire the destroyed property at bargain prices for building smart cities. She will speak this time on how freedom movements are being led into feel-good activity designed to consume money and resources but fail to change anything. Her topic is, let's try winning for a change. So there's I don't know how many, that's probably 15% of the speakers. And there's a whole list of them. You can go to the website. The link is in the newsletter. The link is https://redpilluniversity.org/expo-homepage/. And if your memory is as good as mine, just go to the newsletter and look it up, and you can go from there. And that's about all I have tonight, John. And there really was a shortage of questions. We did have a number of questions for Sheriff Dar, and I have to remind people that there's going to be a lot of people on that call. So when you send a question in, don't just ramble it along. Be very careful to be as clear and concise and basic as you can be, so that we can cover a lot more questions and get a lot better response all the way around. And that's all I have, John.
All right, and when you get a chance, make sure you send me a copy of whatever else you have left. I'll get it out to John.
Okay.
So I've been getting some at my NLA email, and so I'll gather them together and also get them out to John. I'm thinking to asking John to talk with Sheriff Tarr to potentially maybe make it the week after next. I'm not too sure exactly, but we'll see what Sheriff Tarr's schedule is like and if that's a good time. next week, I've been pretty busy this week trying to do a lot of different things and just catch up. I want to work on a letter going out to the Supreme Court concerning their sending our papers back, and they sent a really ridiculous letter, an absurd letter. And I will be reading that probably next week, and hopefully by that point, and I'm sure by that point, I'll have the letter of response. Will probably be a couple pages on the letter of response. Their paper was really, they did it on two pages, their letters, but their letter, but it's really probably about a third of a page or half a page. I don't know why they broke it up onto two pages, but it's the most absurd letter I've ever heard in my life. In any event, We'll probably be reading that next week, and then again, then we'll read the letter, you know, that we're going to be sending back. We will be sending a copy of that letter with their letter attached to all of the individuals in the Trump administration, including Trump, of course, of the response that they gave us to our papers, which they've all received, and also our response to that paper. I'm thinking of also, because this is a doorkeeper, trying to prevent things from going forward, whether the Supreme Court themselves are aware of this particular paper or not, I don't know. I really don't know. There's so much evil out there, especially within the court system, and we do know that there are really some serious problems with a few of those Supreme Court justices. I hate to use the word justices for those individuals, but nevertheless, that's their title. And, it's something I'm sure maybe none of them want to deal with it, because it exposes them all. It exposes the entire federal judiciary. If anybody hasn't read that paper, you should read it. It's on our front page. I believe we've read the paper in full. Well, we probably didn't read the paper in full per se, but we read the meat of the paper, which is the beginning of the paper. I know we've done that on one of our Monday night programs. But there was a lot more that was attached that backed up basically what was being proposed and spoken of concerning the paper in itself in the beginning. We were very, very clear on what this paper was. We're not asking them to make any decisions. We're telling them and reporting subversion at the highest level, the people that are guilty of treason at the highest level, and that the federal court system has been, you know, they totally have gone away from the law of the land. Constitution has been shut down in the federal courts, as well as the state courts and the county courts and the town courts and the village courts and any other courts that I might have missed, the city courts. And the family courts, probation, all of the court systems. And it's up to the people to fix this problem, and only the people can solve this problem. But nevertheless, the other thing we want to do is send a copy of the papers to serve with the letter, with the rejection letter, with our response to the rejection letter, to all of the Supreme Court justices individually. You know, each one of them, all of these nine justices have a particular area. The United States is cut up in certain districts, nine districts. As a matter of fact, I think it was 10, and I think the Chief Justice covers two, if my memory serves me right on that. But nevertheless, it's broken up into 9 or 10 divisions of states, and each justice is liable or responsible to oversee those particular areas that have been applied towards them. And so what we may do is send all a copy of this stuff to them, but that has to be served in a fashion, and all the paperwork has to come through. Now, we don't have the money to do that, and if we're going to do that, we're going to do that probably after we read it next Monday. We'll send it out that week. So between now and then, hopefully, we'll collect enough money to be able to do that. We don't need a lot of money, but we need money. You know, things cost money, and it is what it is. One of the ways people can also support what we're doing and give us some money and get something from it is by taking our course. On our front page, we have click here to sign up to our comprehensive 90-hour law course on civil procedure from the common law perspective for $125. A college course with civil procedure is 5 credits with 50 to 60 class hours, costing about $2,600 per credit, covering litigation, rules, lawsuits, filings, pleadings, discovery, motions, trials, and appeals. Your heritage is in the law, and your inheritance is in liberty. Now, our course is 90 hours, okay, covers a lot more than they cover. We cover the common law perspective, but we give a focus in on, of course, how the system works, covering how to file papers, even the rules. We do look at their rules to some degree, and, you know, any rule that is not repugnant to the common law is acceptable. Any rule that is not repugnant to the common law is not acceptable. We also teach people how to do the filings and how to write pleadings. You know, the mastery of pleadings really is in reading. We teach the structure, the basic ideas of pleadings. We teach discovery, motions, trials, and appeals. The mastery of pleadings and writing a good paper is by reading. The more you read, the better you can write. We have lots of papers that have been written that you can read. There are lots of Supreme Court rulings that you could read. You can cut and paste blocks and pieces from those papers, you know, sentences, paragraphs, whatever you want. We've written many, many memorandums, about 40, I think, altogether, or close to it, if not. You can cut and paste a lot of those things. But again, to write a good paper and do a good response requires, again, reading other people's papers that have been written, you know, in a good way, and being focused on exactly what the case is about. If you file a case or you're responding to a case or whatever the case may be, you need to understand every position, every thought, every idea that the other side has. So whenever they put anything on paper, you can't let anything go by. You need to understand every word, every phrase, every sentence, every paragraph, and you need to be able to respond to each one of those, either in writing or, well, everything has to be in writing fashion. The paperwork is what makes up the trial process, and if you don't cover it in your paperwork, in your discovery and the filings and the requirements, the discoveries and all those things, if you don't cover it, you can't bring it in later. So you got to be very careful to make sure you cover it. You'll also have a battle with the courts, who will try to keep certain things out. The other side will try to prevent you from bringing certain things in. I think we covered some of that in the course, but if we haven't, we can speak more about that in more depth here on a Monday night program if people ask questions concerning that. But anyway, our course is $125 in opposed to about, it's $2,600 per credit in some places, and other places it's cheaper. I think that's the maximum. And it's 5 credits, so times 5, that's $13,000. So it's going to cost you $10,000 to $13,000 to take a course, and you'll get the bar course. You know, they'll not teach anything on the Constitution. They won't address the law of the land from the Constitution's perspective, natural law. But we cover, of course, that. And again, they're 60 hours, we're 90 hours. I also, anybody taking the course, we strongly suggest that you pick up the book Court Access Court Access in the Common Law book. I think that's $35. It's not necessary to do that to take the course, but let me just go to that page and look at that. Books by John Darash. Click on under Welcome page. Court Access in the Common Law, it's $39.95. Now, the book does have some things in it that the course doesn't have. The course has some things that the book doesn't have. But the book is very handy, and I think by getting the book, after looking at it recently and thinking a little bit about this, the book give you once you go through the course, that book will give you a great perspective, as long as you've gone through the course. And it'll help to tie things together in your mind, in the framework of your mind, in a better fashion. So I strongly suggest you get that book for anybody. And anybody who is in the courts and doesn't need to take the course because they have a certain amount of knowledge, the court, this Court Access in the Common Law book will probably help you, maybe for some things you don't know. There's also a book we put together, Understanding the Federal Courts, if you're going into the federal courts. Now, the other book that is a definite necessity, I wrote this for myself many, many years ago, and I did put it into a handbook eventually once I started writing books because I realized that other people might need something like this, and that is the Common Law Court handbook. That's this one right here. Okay, and that'll assist you to respond to things off the fly in the courtroom. And it's $10.99 for that book. It's a handbook. It's 311 pages. And again, it's a very powerful handbook. And I wrote it for myself so that when I'm in court, I can quickly find information, things that I might want to use and respond to in the court. One of the most important things to understand that if you are in a court case, that everything you do, you want to put in writing. No matter what you say in the courtroom, if it's something that hasn't been in written form yet, you know, you want to then, when you leave the court that day, you want to file a paper to really, you know, review what was going on in the court and what the position and what everything you held or wanted to make as a point. Because remember, you got to work off the record when you're in a trial. Once you get to trial, you can't bring anything new in. So you got to make sure you got everything that you can produce, and you got to make sure that you can get everything through discovery, whatever they have on the other side. And quite often, through discovery, if you're very careful going through it, you can ask for things and word things in such a way that they'll give you information that they don't want to give you, okay, that they'd like to see kept out of the court. So again, we do our best to try to teach how that process works and how you could do that. But getting back to the going in and buying the course, again, for $125, that's one way you can also support us, because that money goes right into National Liberty Alliance, and that, of course, we'll be using at this point to focus in on the filing costs and the papers and the printing and, you know, all the costs that we have in order to file all these papers. You know, there's a lot of mailing involved. There's a lot of signature requirements that cost money. We have to serve in the right kind of a fashion to all of these individuals. We have to be able to get back to it and prove that we did the filing. And, of course, we have to print out all these papers, which is quite a few pages. And then, of course, the letters and so on and so forth. So there's probably be about 40, 45 filings when we include the Supreme Court. So, again, life isn't free, and I'm not rich, so we do need some help. Of course, people can just go up and give us a donation. You can find a donation tab on the top right side of our website. Let me get back to that. That'd be, I'm not signed in, am I? I don't think I am. Let me see. Oh, yeah, I am. I got to log in. Let me move this so I can log in. Sometimes, you know, I don't know why, but when you come online, I'm signed in most of the time, but from time to time, I'm not signed in. Usually you get a little message letting you know that you're not signed in. And signing in gives you a little more access to a few things, but not much, because we give everything away for free almost. Let me just finish this login. Okay, back to the welcome page. Okay, which I'm kind of surprised. I thought the donation tab was there without being signed in, but I guess it's not. So, but anyway, you can click on the donation tab and give a donation to help support. Everyone should be supporting NLA with $5 a month or more, just keeping us alive, keeping the lights on, and so on. And $5 a month is not a lot of money. You know, it's a cup of coffee and a donut or rolling butter or whatever. But, you know, it takes 20 people to get $100 together. So we need 20 people giving us $5 to just pull $100 together. And it costs a few thousand dollars to keep things going on a monthly basis. And of course, anything we do with any, you know, like with the Supreme Court, what we're doing now, or the sheriff's, things we're doing with the sheriffs, it all costs money, because life costs money. And I had a few people complaining that I talk about the books from time to time. Maybe I talk about it too much and so on. But that's the only way we can get forward to get any money to really get anything done here. But again, donations are important. people should be giving $5 a month. There are people who give 10. There are people who give 20. Some people who give 100. And there are some people who give more. There are a few people that every once in a while they give a pretty large sum, and that really kind of brings us back to catch up and fulfill our needs, financially speaking, in order to do the filings and, you know, get the paperwork, you know, get the buying paper and toner, and everybody knows that stuff is expensive, very expensive. So we need help to do what we need to do in order for we to help the people. You know, a lot of people, they listen to a lot of different programs. You get your news from different places, so you listen to podcasters. You know, if anybody can make a connection for us to any podcaster where we can become interviewed concerning what we do here at National Liberty Alliance, we'd appreciate it. And that's something everybody can do. You know, like I said, people listen to all kinds of other people. Take a few minutes out and send an email to them, or however you can contact them, and make note of National Liberty Alliance, give them a website, tell them a little bit of what we're doing, and only the people can save America. People need to be educated to do that. And when we read this paper next week, as in all of our papers, you know, this is going to be very powerful, but it's going to be very revealing to the evil that these people have really gotten to, the state that they have gotten to. It kind of reminds me of this movie. It's an old movie going back maybe 30 years. I'm trying to think of the name of it, where this dirty cop decides to help. He gets caught on something, and he makes an agreement with the feds to help bring down a whole mess of illegal things. And I can't think of the name of the movie, but that's not an important thing anyway. But the main part of the movie was, is as he was going to help the FBI, he started to realize how much of a criminal he really was and how much he was involved. And he was just getting sick to his stomach coming to that realization. And I think that's the way it is with a lot of lawyers, maybe. You know, they kind of know, but they choose not to know. They choose to build a brick wall or whatever it is. You know, they're taught, they are coming in through a system where they're not really properly educated anyway, just like most of us who have never been properly educated in our schools, because they never taught us the things we really should know about civil law, the Constitution, the court system, who we are as a people, the powers and the authorities, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, the law. You know, they never taught us any of those things. You know, I mean, I myself was ignorant as everyone else is until I come to the realization that I needed to, you know, see these things. And I started to wake up in 1999. And I got deeper and deeper into what was really going on and working on my knowledge of who we are as a people. You know, the fact that we're a Christian nation, the fact that we're under the laws of nature and that nature's God. And that nature's God is Jesus Christ out of the Bible. And that's what we're under. Same as the Magna Carta. If anybody read the Magna Carta, it's almost like reading the Bible, so to speak, in the sense that there's so much reference to God. So that's the first most important document of liberty, would be the Magna Carta. And of course, we built upon that Magna Carta with our Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence. And these people in power, they're taught that we're under Roman law, which is nothing short of Babylonian law, the law of the city, the law of controlling the slaves, the law of fleecing and keeping you under control. They've made merchandise of us. We are chattel to them, livestock, and we have a value. And when you go to prison, they are able to draw off that value. When you die, they draw off that value. It's called a CESQ account that everyone has. They call us a person, which brings us to a corporation. It's really a sick situation, and they use language that is very deceiving. People don't realize because the language, people think they understand, but they don't. They really don't. And people need to learn these things. Most importantly, of course, they need to learn who we are as a people, and that we are the people ordained and established the law for them to be obedient to. They have decided to become the lawmakers and make law upon themselves, making rules and using rules to abrogate even the law itself. And the general public is totally blind to the whole thing. And most lawyers are, too. To some degree, I think it's by choice, because a lot of lawyers are educated individuals. They're not dumb. They go to college. They go to law school. They take other subjects, of course, as they're going through their college process for their education. And they learn other things, and they have to do research from time to time, of course, because that's what lawyers have to do, not just in the law books, but in other things, and even Supreme Court rulings. And when that's said and done, contradictive things must come up into their brains, into their minds, that they're looking into things, and they see the contradiction. But they're so caught up on greed, on money. I think that's the big problem. And being part of the boys' club, also not going up against their fellow peers, comrades, fellow criminals, because money has become more important than anything else. I want to tell you, I always get sick, and I've been sickened so many times over the years whenever I have opportunity to have conversation with lawyers. And it's all about money to these people. They couldn't care less whether they win or lose a case. In most cases, they can't care, in most cases anyway, because they're going to get paid either way. They just don't care. But the people fall for this, and they tell you that only a fool will represent themselves. Well, I say only a fool would not represent themselves. Unless it was a serious criminal case, you would want someone to work with you and maybe to take a lead in many ways, but you need to control that leader. You need to control what papers go in. You need to control what positions are being made. And if you're working with the truth and the knowledge of how things really work, most lawyers aren't going to work with you, because they know they'll lose their... They claim to have a license. They don't have a license, but they claim that they'll lose their license. The card that they have is really a union's card. It's a bar association card. Lawyers are not licensed. Certain lawyers are licensed for certain processes, okay? In order to represent someone like an infant or a child, a young child, or someone that is, for lack of a better word, a moron, that's totally incapable of representing themselves in any way, shape, or form, or participate in any way in the process, then those particular lawyers have to have a certain approval from the state. And that's about it, okay? But they claim that we're all morons. That none of us know. And to some degree, they're right. When you talk about the law and the legalities of things, we are morons. We're very ignorant. We have no clue. We have no clue on what's going on. We don't understand their language. Sometimes we think we do, but we don't, because they play games with words. Words have different meanings for what we have and what they've, what they use, and it's called legalese. It's a game they play. But we are ignorant to all these things. And once you know you're ignorant and there's a problem out there, well, then woe is you if you don't fix that problem. Because one day you're going to be caught up into something at some point in your life, and most likely, I think most people are, will be. You're going to wish that you got that education. You're going to wish that you understood what was going on. You're going to wish that you can control the individual that's representing you. I mean, they have hearings that go on, and they don't even have their clients come in. They don't want you to the courtroom. Until the trial, they don't even want you there. And they send you a bill every time they go into the court, and they do everything they can to go in for a little hearing there and a hearing there, because every time they go in, and it's another, $1,500, $2,000, $2,500, depending on what they charge for each one of these issues. Okay, but anyway, education is the key. Our heritage is in the law. Our inheritance is liberty. And if you don't know your heritage, and you can't know your heritage unless you know the law, then you're susceptible to really be beaten up pretty bad, and they're just going to pull the wool over your eyes. Figuratively speaking, the wool over your eyes, because we're sheeple. We have to stop being sheeple. So anyway, people should take the courses, and we have lots of free courses, you know, while we're talking about courses. If you come under Education Starts Here, you can look at our courses. Most of our courses are free on this level. We have a couple of courses that we ask people to be a premier member for in order to get into that course. And a premier member is someone giving us $5 a month or more. Some people that are really practically have no income or whatever and really can't afford to get into the, you know, put the $5 a month on, which is very, very rare, but there are people, we let them in for free. You know, we'll push the buttons and just make them a premium member so they can get into all these courses for free. We have a foundation study. We have a constitutional course 101. It's an introduction. We have a free civics course. We have a government by consent course. We have a militia course. We have a jury administrative accredited course. And again, those courses are free. And like I said, a couple of them you have to be premium member. But again, the big course on which gives you an education in access into the court system, writing papers and so on, running through a trial, we charge for that. And, $125 versus $13,000, I think that's a real good deal. But besides that, that also supports what we're doing, and that's the key here. We need money to fulfill what we really want to do in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to read the paper. I was hoping to find time this past week to write this letter and put it together and read it tonight, along with the letter that they sent. But I was unable to do it. But I do have the time this week. I'm going to make the time, make sure this week, to get this done. I will produce that letter next week. I will read their letter first. I'll read our response to that letter. And people who, if you haven't been here to hear the reading of the case, or you haven't gone up to read the case itself, okay, you can come down to grand jury presentment to the United States Supreme Court. And you can read that presentment right here with a cover letter. So what you do is click on that. You get a copy of the paper, which is a national emergency and extraordinary presentment. And, of course, our cover letter, which really this cover letter is to President Trump and his administration. They got a copy of all our papers, and this is the cover letter that went with that to them. So again, education is the key point. This is what we do here. We also teach people, of course, how to have government by consent through the committees of safety. We try to encourage people to create or join a committee of safety within your county. Very important thing, because that's the only way we're going to take this country back. Trump is working on giving it to the people. But I say unto you, just as, Benjamin Franklin, who said to an individual after they put together and discovered what kind of a government they were going to have, he was asked, what kind of government are we up with? What do we got? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. You see, if you're ignorant to the law, if you're ignorant to who we are as a people, if you're ignorant to the history of the United States, if you're ignorant to the Constitution, if you're ignorant to the Bill of Rights, if you're ignorant to the Declaration of Independence, if you're ignorant to the U.S. codes, the lawful ones, if you're ignorant to all those things, you can't possibly have government by consent. You can't possibly execute your unalienable right of government by consent. And you're right, of government by consent is extremely powerful. Our founding fathers did not leave us without, you know, the ability to deal with this government and put them in their place and to chain them down, to bind them down with the chains of Constitution. I think that's how Jefferson put it. And Jefferson was crystal clear. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and is never will be. So, again, this is the purpose of National Liberty Alliance. To those who are new here or listening to us on Rumble or YouTube that are new, these are the things we do. So, anyway, this is what we need to do. Hopefully, I'll be able to bring this all up next Monday. And I'm going to see, I'll let you know next Monday. I'll be talking with John and talking with Sheriff Darr. To see once whether the week after next weekend might be a good time to do this. Now, we're going to give the entire almost 2 hours to Sheriff Darr. You know, of course, we start off things with a Bible reading and an introduction to, you know, welcoming people to the NLA meeting and basic information. But then we're going to go right to Sheriff Darr after that. The first order of business is for him to answer the questions that people have been sending in. If anybody has any questions that they want to ask Sheriff Darr, you can send them in writing if you want. You send it to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org, and in the subject matter, put Sheriff Darr or questions for the sheriff. Keep it short, as Jan has mentioned, and on point, focused. Some questions that are being mailed in may not be accepted because it's just too long-winded and taking up too much time, and so we need to have these things done in reasonable, nothing too long. After he answers all of those questions, then he will be taking questions, do a Q&A. Over, right, you know, live, and people will be able to ask questions directly to him. I'm not sure how this all might work. He might have something to say that he might want to share before we even start, but that'd probably be in the beginning. And then the Q&A of what questions have been mailed in, and then an open forum. So I think it'll be an exciting time, and if necessary, maybe we'll take longer. You know, we usually go from 9 to 11. You know, we used to do 9 to 12. We did that for many, many years. I think it was a couple of years, 3 years, 4 years ago, we broke back to 2 hours instead of 3 hours. But if necessary, we'll go overtime on that particular Monday. Okay, with that, we're going to take questions. Hopefully, we'll stay on point to things that we need to be speaking about. Hopefully, people have things to share or corrections to offer, or a good question which will bring hopefully knowledge to everybody. So anybody else wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, it's a *6-1. If you're on an app or a browser, should be a button there to get into the queue, and we'll take it from there. Okay, so our first caller is anonymous. You can give us, once you're opened, you can give us your first name and your state. Unmuted. Go right ahead. I think you have. Let me try it this way. You've been unmuted. First name and your state.
Oh, thank you.
John, can you hear me all right?
Right. Is this Elizabeth?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Let me get off. Echoing. Okay. Oh, now I hear my voice. Stop. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, this is Elizabeth. I've been studying Chapter 11, the case that you did, and I don't know if it's finished yet, but on the IRS and income tax and all that. Mm-hmm. And there's something I'm trying to define, and I probably just need to do a word study because I love to do those, but there's intent. And then there's motive. And they look a lot alike, but it's like intent is like the object maybe of what someone wants to do to commit a crime.
And then the motive is where they're coming from, like, you know, what it is that's driving them to do that. So when I listen to this case, and, you know, there's a point where they shut you down, I believe, and I'm probably going to use the wrong terminology, but I'm learning. You said you had to just look at it for a while. You had to sit and pray with it. You know, you had to, and because you didn't know what you were going to do. And that's the thing that I guess my mind has been trained, like we're going to automatically know what to do. Well, you know, life has taught me that sometimes I don't know what I'm going to do until I get to that intersection. And that's part of the excitement of being alive, you know. So, but it just seems like the court was, there's this obsession about, so what are their intention? It took it totally off the subject of why, you know, you were there. And all of a sudden it's all about trying to manage them and get them to do this and that, which you have, you know, that's part of the game, right? But in the meantime, they're not really addressing the need of, you know, the man you're representing and that kind of thing. And that's a crime. And I'm just like, wow, I'm just realizing these things, you know. So anyway, I just really appreciate that case, and I've been listening to it on MP3, and also but I'm gonna like break it down, and because I think I can, that will help me greatly to build my own case, especially because when you went back to sue them, you had different parties that you were suing, and I'm just trying to be respectful, you know, of what it is I'm looking at, because too much in my life, I would just dive into something and then I miss a lot of things because my motive was to just get it done. And I need to do this, but I this isn't a game, you know, anymore. And so thank you. And one other thing I wanted to talk about is because I go online. I don't like social media, but I do go on subject matter, and I can kind of tell the people who are just part of the group that, you know, it's just so destructive and deceptive, and it's just a whole thing. I don't want to give them too hard of a time. But I found Seattle is a lot like New York City, or is it Manhattan, you know, where they've got this communist mayor. And in Seattle, there's a communist mayor, and she's very young, and she's just very cavalier and flippant about all the, and these huge companies are leaving Seattle. And Seattle is, I lived in Seattle for a while, and I thought, you know, this is one of the best kept secrets in our country, because it was beautiful. And now it's, you know, it's trashed and all of that. And I think this has been planned for a while. Going back to that Chaz thing that happened around 2018, where it came in and they killed some people there on Capitol Hill and all that, you know, it's just, but it's weird because I look at this young mayor, and she needs to be, you know, she needs to have her, something needs to be straightened out in her. But then I look, and then I look at the people who voted her in. And it's like this phenomenal, like, where did these people come from? And then I, you know, because she taxes everything. They tax everything. And when the people leave and vacate these huge buildings, the owners of the buildings, they have a vacancy tax. And it just, it's like, it's a destructive thing. And, you know, maybe this is another version of the wildfires, you know. Or if they can just destroy the city from financially, that then they can maybe build a smart city there. But I don't think it's going to last that long. But my point of bringing all that up is I'm just waiting to see, you know, because these cities have been put into place and they've been allowed to cultivate. And I know it's very liberal there. And I'm not liberal. I was when I was young because it was a different kind of liberal. But like my friends are liberal and they don't know, they don't want to know things. And it's like maybe this is just kind of a self-destruction that's happening, but they just need the Constitution. They don't know who they are. And, you know, and then when it's gotten me looking in the Constitution where it talks about taxation, because they don't have any, they just make up stuff. So it's just interesting to see how this stuff's playing out. And it's almost like the Constitution and with the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, it's just going to be too simple for these criminal, supposed lawful system that's we've been in. It's just too simple. And but it is. It's simple. It allows me to then go in and pull stuff out of me that I always wanted to be able to learn how to do, because otherwise they're just going to tell me what I should think. So anyway, I just said a whole lot of stuff, but I just appreciate your course, and I wish more people took it. But anyway, thank you for listening.
Because they need an education. They need a proper education. They never got a proper education. And unfortunately, you know, schools are producing morons. They're producing stupid people. They're producing people who can't think and won't think for themselves. Technology is a great thing, but technology is destructive. Children of the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and even the 80s, and until you start to move into the 90s, I guess, they had a different upbringing. They didn't have something in before them. They didn't have this glass screen in front of them that controls their mind, their thinking, their focus, and they're bored to death if they don't have that screen open in front of them. They live by it. You know, I've made this point many times. I've gone to places like you go to, you know, Dunkin' Donuts or something. You can come in and sit down, and people, or even a diner in different places, people come together, they sit down, and you get good conversation. But now it's everybody sits down around a table. No one's talking to each other. They're all looking at those stupid glass machines, and it's just making them stupid. It's controlling them. Children are fat. They when I was a kid, there were very few children that I remember being fat. And when I look back, I think it had a lot to do with maybe a health problem of some kind. Because sometimes, you know, people get fat because they have some kind of a problem. But most people that are fat really are fat because take a lot of sugar, take a lot of I can't think of the word. Anyway.
Carbohydrates?
No, well, bread particularly.
Carbohydrates.
Carbohydrates. I was saying it backwards. That's what it is. Carbohydrates. Thank you. And we take way too much of that. I remember they were pushing cereals when I was young, there was the most destructive things they could do because children were filling up with these cereals and then a lot of sugar in these cereals and so on and so forth. But really the point I'm trying to get to is children had time to think. We went out and we played. You know, we would come home and do our homework. We didn't have these computers. We didn't have the dumb telephones. They call them smartphones. They're really dumb phones because they make you dumb. They don't teach you. They demoralize our children in school. They teach them strange things. I don't even know if they say the Pledge of Allegiance anymore. The Bible has been removed. Morals don't come to play. Correction is a problem at home, and in the schools. You know, when I was a child, I went to a Catholic school, and you got in trouble or something, you'd get a whacking. Let me tell you, they'd whack you on the rear end with a stick, or you'd get it on your hands. Nobody thought that was child abuse. It kept us straight, kept us moral, kept us focused. That's why most Catholics, especially from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, I would presume, are reasonably moral to a major degree anyway.
Could be compliance if they're afraid of them. But if they love them, if they love the kids, then they receive the correction. I mean, that's the way it was for me. My mother would spank us. You know, this was harder on me than it was on you. And I'm like, wow, you know, I had no idea. She even You know, so...
You spank your child in public or something, you give them a whack in the rear end or something, and you report it for child abuse. It's insane. But, you know, that's just some of the things. But children don't have time to really think, because their thought process is set forward for them by the social medias that they're involved with on their telephones. Children shouldn't have those smartphones until maybe they're 16, 17, 18 years old. Parents shouldn't give them. It's too destructive. Let them go outside and play. Let them sit in their room and think about things. Let them go read a book. They don't do those things anymore, okay?
Well, you know, and so that being the case, how are they going to be able to sit down and read we're learning to read here?
We have a very serious problem. There is a solution to this, but the people may not be mature enough to receive that solution. Those of us who are, you know, old enough, what our parents particularly, of course, we haven't been educated properly yet either ourselves. Maybe some people, you know, people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, maybe, you know, again, going back to when you were growing up, you know, that's what really sets your life. That's why there's such a high rate of suicide with children. Depression sets in. You know, you take a phone away from a kid, they don't know what to do with themselves, okay? When I was a kid, I couldn't wait to hit the streets and hang out with my friends and do all kinds of things. We had all kinds of activities. And I grew up in New York City, you know? There was always something going on. But, you know, look, the solution is this. Those who hear, let's start back at a principle. We have government not by the majority, but by the majority that participates, okay? So we need to be the majority that participates. That means we have to get committees of safety in every county, okay? Or at least most counties, eventually every county, okay? Once you get a committee of safety going, you start to take control of your government, because we have government by the consent of the people. People need to learn how to have government by consent. They need to exercise that unalienable right. They need to know and understand how they can take control of their school boards and remove those people if they're not going to be obedient to the will of the people within that school district. People need to know how to take control also of their local governments in the same fashion, in the same way. Remove them from power. Remove them from authority. You know, you have a congressman you send to the federal level, and they're not obedient to the will of the people, and they're involved with all this silly, stupid, crazy stuff. Let's remove them. It's easy to remove these people, but people don't know how to remove them. It's very, very simple. We just get petitions. We just have to get the right number of petitions. That information we get from the Board of Election. Okay, how many petitions do you need in order to remove a particular individual in a particular office? And it's related to how many votes they were voted in for at the time when they were voted in. And you have to get maybe 5%. So if they were voted in by 50,000 votes, then you have to 5% of that. It's almost like a mathematical equation in a sense, like take a governor. In order to get rid of a governor, you have to have 2/3 of the counties of people with a minimum amount of petitions within those counties. So you have to have 2/3 of the counties, a minimum amount of petitions in each of those counties collectively with a certain number. Usually it's 5%. You can get rid of your sheriff in a heartbeat. And once you let that sheriff know you're not going to be obedient to the Constitution, you're not going to pay attention to we the people, we're going to recall you, and we'll pull you out of office within 90 days, and we'll put someone there that will uphold the Constitution and protect the people, their unalienable rights. Okay.
You know, John, one thing, if I may just say this, because I don't want to take too much time, but I'm sorry, what did you say there? Sorry, answer.
Well, let me finish up. We'll get back to what, because I remember the question you had. I got a note.
Oh, yeah. No, it's fine. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me finish this point, because it's so important.
Yes.
Okay. So the people, if we get enough people to take back the government, when that number we've estimated to be about, if I recall, let me just run a quick number on a calculator here. Where's my calculator? Here it is. Let's take 40 people a county times 3,000 counties, okay? That's 120,000. If we can get 150,000 people across America involved, we then can take control of this entire nation. Because right now, this nation is controlled by four individuals in every county. And then there's the four individuals on the state level that control all of those county levels. And I think it's maybe a dozen people, I don't remember the number, up on the federal level that control the states. Because they're all controlled by political parties. The only way we can get rid of political parties is to educate the people, to have the knowledge and understanding. Because if you tell people we have to get rid of political parties, they go into cardiac arrest. They think that the government will work. They think that that'll be the problem. No, the problem is parties, because if there was no parties, then guess what the people would be doing that we put into power, into authority? They'd be looking to fulfill the will of the people that sent them there. Instead, they go and they now fulfill the will of a party boss. That's the problem. Our founding fathers were clear. They laid this out. George Washington laid this out clearly in his farewell address. Don't get involved with these political parties. But in any event, we need to take control of our local government. And we need to take control of our schools. The schools is the first order of business. In my opinion, that's what we teach on the committees of safety. You know, you have to get things going. You have to start creating your committees, and the first subcommittee you need to create, in my opinion, and people could do what they want, of course, but we strongly suggest that they start working with the education committee. Because the education committee, we have to bring a proper education back into our schools. And the people can do it on the grassroots level in each one of these school districts. I forget how many school districts we have in my county here, but let me think. It's something like, if I recall, maybe 30, somewhere around there, 30 school districts. And that being the case...
We have to start new school districts because the others are so...
No, we take them back. Listen, we can remove those people that make the decisions, okay? These school districts, by law, have to come together every so often and open themselves up to the community. And the community comes in and talks and begs and asks, and they're ignored. But we don't come in and ask and beg and ignored. We come in with the sheriff. And the sheriff has the papers, you know, we have in the papers in our back pocket to hand over to the sheriff a writ quo warranto requiring them to do the will of the people. And they got 3 days to fulfill and respond, and if they don't, we start the process of removal. And we seize the control of their seats that they have, and we look for people who will take those seats either temporarily or permanently, whatever they want, doesn't matter. But we need to replace those people, and they need to do the will of the community at large. But people don't know how to do that. We're teaching people in that. We've written handbooks on this stuff. And in any event, that's the main thing we need to do. We need to get the people to take control of the country, the nation, and we need to then take control of our schools. We need to take control of our courts. Same process, same procedure. We need to take control of the people we send for state senators or state assembly. We need to take control of them. Obey the Constitution. Fulfill the will of the people. Or take a hike or we'll remove you. Same thing with the people we send. Every level, we can remove them all. The only one I don't think we could remove is the president. But we can remove the governor. We can remove anyone in Congress, anyone in the Senate. We can remove anyone on the boards, whether it's town board, a city board, any board, educational board. We can remove them. 90 days out of that. In the cases of certain of these people, we can remove them in 3 days. Okay? So that's what we need to do. And bring a proper education back into the schools. And then we need to get these children back on point. We need to take their phones away, too. We have to be mature enough to remove the phones. Let them whine. Let them complain. Who cares? My parents would let me whine a little bit, and then they'd have enough of it, and that'd be it. It would be it and done. And anybody born in the 50s and the 60s, I think, can relate to what I'm saying. But we lost all that because we've been too liberalized with these liberals, you know. Those people who believe in the Constitution and put things up, they were liberals back in the day, going back 250 years ago. But today, liberals are people who are destructive, you know. We need to be conservative and bring back what we were. But let me get to your original question.
Well, you know, the thing that I'm right now focusing on is, like, I hold on to words you're saying in this
you know, when you're doing, it's chapter 11, the, you know, the IRS. So, but, you know, you get, I know you must get kind of concerned, you know, when you said that you prayed about it, you had to sit with it, put it aside, which is very adult, you know, where some people would just freak out. And, you know, I need to grow. I'm not like I was even 10 years ago, but, you know, a certain amount of anxiety comes if, you know, because the courts can be very threatening, and or they can just imply a threat, and it'll just cause people to freak out, and then they'll, you know, so, but you, like you said something like, you know, I got this letter, and, you know, the judge is just, he's lying here, and he's breaking the law left and right in this letter, and it's like, see, to be able to identify where the laws are being broken, and to know that there is recourse. But then that brings the thing about enforcement of the law, because, you know, there's a town out here that a sheriff put a man, I mean, a judge put a man in jail for 2 weeks because he spoke out before the judge told him to. And then the sheriff was right there ready to enforce whatever that judge said. So then we've got all this law enforcement, and I'm sure there's a large amount of them who, you know, would want to learn the common law. It's not like it's, you know, it's actually quite normal. I mean, we could,
that too.
Beg your pardon?
We have a process for that, how to bring the sheriff into the Committee of Safety, to work with the Committee of Safety, to become educated. And it begins with really the first meeting, which really given to this particular sheriff in your county the information on who we are, you know, and that's something, you know, one of the first things you need to do when you create a Committee of Safety is you have to put together a charter and resolutions. And we've already written the charter, and we've written the resolutions, which is a framework, and people will add to it. And, you know, we strongly suggest maintain what we put together, but people can do whatever they want. They're free and independent on the county, on every level in the grassroots. But once you put together a charter and resolution, you get a copy of the book, Government by Consent. You get the for the sheriff. You can buy a few of them, and he'll give it to the sheriff, he'll give it to his leadership, you know, his lieutenants and his under-sheriff and so on. And you give him a month and a half to, you know, digest all that information. And then you have him come visit your Committee of Safety, and you're going to ask him questions, and talk to him about what he's learned, and how you're going to support him if he's a constitutionalist, and if he's resistant to that, and he's on another channel, well, you let him know, buddy, we're going to do a recall, and we'll get another sheriff who's going to obey the Constitution and support the will of the people. It's that simple.
Right. It's just the status quo with the bar, and the bar is in everything.
Doesn't matter. Recall their
right.
Good.
But what happens is, John, what I see happening is that then the foot soldiers, you know, they don't even know what they're doing. They're just following these people because whatever. I mean, they need to be educated too, you know.
Right. Problem with that, look, I would say, and this is my guess, of course, I think 20% of the population are stupid people, okay? To some degree, it's higher than that recently because people are just made to be stupid through the school, their education they get, the stupid glass boxes they sit and look at all day long. It just makes you dumber and dumber and dumber and dumber. It doesn't bring you anywhere. You know, when you understanding comes to those who pursue it, okay, when you don't understand something and you think about it, you meditate on it, you look up the words, get a better understanding, maybe there are words you think you understand, maybe you need to understand them better, you read it within the context, and you keep digging on it, eventually you'll understand it, okay? You know, I come to understand some years back, all I have to do is understand something, I need not remember it, I need not memorize it, I don't need anything more than just to understand. And I move nowhere without understanding whatever it is I'm looking at, whether I'm looking into my Bible or looking into history. And sometimes it takes a while to come to understanding. Sometimes it takes prerequisite understanding of certain things before you come to the understanding of that thing. It's a building block. You know, law is constructive. The Bible is constructive. And that's how I learned what the Bible is law. So.
Yeah.
law is constructive. So once I learned that from the Bible, I applied it to the law that we have, and it's constructive. Line upon line, precept upon precept, it's built up, okay? And so that's what we have to do. But people, unfortunately, have made to be lazy. Stupidity is on a growing, alarming, rise. And technology, I use technology. It's the greatest thing in the world to me. But I use it for a purpose and a reason. I don't go out to play. I go out to work, to understand, to learn, to gather. So technology can be great, but for most people, it's destructive. When you give technology to a child who has no clue on how to handle it, you're destroying that mind of that child. You're destroying even their very soul. And people need to grow up and stop, you know, the nonsense and take care of their responsibilities as parents. It's that simple. Now, this, you know, I'm saying it's simple, but I know it's not. Everything is difficult when you're in a habitual fashion. You got these habits and ways and things you've been doing, and all of a sudden now you have to change. Well, you got to think about, how am I going to change? How am I going to respond to my child now? Because I've let them go so far with this, I got to take it away from them now. How can I maybe teach them how to use it more responsibly? You know, my children never had these problems with these phones because they're not involved with any of that stuff because we didn't allow them to grow up that way. They do have smartphones. They are on the computer. They do get involved with different things, but not like the children that haven't been controlled. One of my nephews, who I spent time with him, and I used to listen to what he's doing and talking with his friends. It's very alarming. It's very alarming. I had to correct him so many times because, you know, something happens to a child and everybody jumps onto the wagon laughing. I said, how can you do that? You know? Yeah. And I shake him. And it's gotten into him, but still, you know, he's not my child. I can't totally control him because it was my child that controlled him a lot more. I mean, he's grown now. He's 21 now. And he's a decent kid. But
what about people who are like 50, you know, and they, because this started like in the 80s, the 70s and 80s, and I mean, it really got planted in.
Well, computers came out. I was early on the computer. I came onto the computer in 1990. I got my first computer, and it was the third version of Windows, Windows 3.0. That's what it was, Windows 3.0. And I came in on AOL, okay, that pretty much was mostly what was out there at the time. And, you know, there were a few places you can get on, you know, other ways. It was through the phone, you had to dial in, you know, and all that stuff. But I think the computer world really started probably in 89, maybe 88, okay. But started to, like I said, I got in early. I was in 1990 on the computer. But I got into the computer because an architect friend of mine, I was over his house with a few other individuals, and they were looking at a computer that he had bought, and it was Windows 3.0, and he had a Bible program called QuickVerse. And I was just blown away, you know, because I was doing Bible studies back then, and I'd have notebooks full of notes and verses and, you know, doing my studies. And with a computer, I saw you could not only get into the concordances. You got the Greek, you got the Hebrew, you know. So it's really powerful, New Testament, Old Testament, and I went out and bought one. Back then it was, I think it was $3,500 for 3.0 Windows, and then I bought the program, and I would do a Bible study in a day that would take me a week. Or even in some cases a month to do, okay? And it was just amazing. I saw the power, and I incorporated it into my business because I was a contractor, and so that's what I've used the computer and technology for that purpose. I never used it to play on the lines, go into social media, and that became more and more popular as time went on. So that really started in the 90s. I'd say probably the by 93, 94 is when, you know, everybody was really starting to get into it. And the smartphones, I think they came out when in the late 90s, right? Maybe 90, 98 or 99, somewhere around there. And I was even early on that because they had phones back then which had two-way radios also connected to it, and it was very expensive. And I bought these phones for, you know, the managers so that I can communicate with them. I used to have a phone bill of $1,000 a month, you know, and back in the early 90s, that's a lot of money, you know.
Right.
But people have been using it for the wrong reason. They've used it to control the people and maintain moronicity. You know, they're just morons. They're stupid. They got to make the people dumb. You got to keep the people dumb and illiterate. And so you got to be illiterate to who we are as a people. You have to be illiterate to your morality, to who we are as a people before God, who God is. They got to make you illiterate to those things, dumb. And they've achieved that goal. But only the people can turn this around. President Trump is doing a great job, and I believe by the end of the year, our minds are going to be totally blown on where he's taken us. And when we get there, the problem is, it's like just the same thing that, you know, that Benjamin Franklin said, you know, he's going to give us back our republic, so to speak. I don't even know if he understands we're a republic. I'm still questioning that. But he's going to give us the things back that we need to be given back. But what if the people don't know what to do with it?
Right.
He's going to give us the ability to have government by consent, but people don't know how to have government by consent. They're in National Liberty Alliance.
Well, you know, there's a lot of arrests that have already been made in the judicial system. I mean, there has to be, or you can't just jump into the middle of this. But it's just that people are so used to just relying on these names. You know, we've been taught, you know, if you get nervous when we see a gun and a badge. I mean, it's just, we've been taught that. And there's no reason to feel that way. You know, there's really nothing rational about it. It's just a reaction. And probably they've got something that they did they feel guilty about, so that's what comes up. That's what, I've seen that in me, you know, especially when I was younger. But I mean, now I'm able to go, okay, what's this about? But when I was younger, I was just reactive, you know. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's just that the people who can really help us right now are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, and 70s, you know, and 80s. You know, I mean, it's just that it has to come from inside the people. You know, it can't just be signing up a bunch of people. You know, people will sign up and then they'll go away. It's a waste of time.
Yeah.
So,
well, anyway. you know, Musk. And by the way, if anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6 and 1.
Yeah, and I don't want to be on
browser, there should be a button there to pursue. We only have one other person in the queue, which we'll be getting to shortly. But you got some good questions here tonight. I appreciate the call, but I want to respond to a couple of things you said. But before I do that, I wanted to bring up something about a Musk. It slipped my mind. Maybe I'll bring it up in a minute. But let's go to motive and the difference between you were concerned, you know, what is motive and what is intent. And if you go into Black's law, I use 4th edition almost exclusively, but I also use 2nd edition too. But anyway, Black's Law, 4th edition, talks about motive, cause or reason that moves the will and induces action, okay? So, and here's the difference between the two, okay? In the popular mind, intent and motive are not infrequently regarded as one and the same thing. In law, there is a clear distinction between them. Motive is the moving power which impels to action for a definite result. Intent is the purpose to use a particular means to effect such results. So motive is that which incites or stimulates a person to do an act. But again, intent is everything about the law. You know, in order for you to be guilty of a crime, you have to have intent. And if you can't prove intent, there is no crime. You know, when you take something like vehicular homicide, okay, and then they make that a crime, okay? Well, if it's an accident, it's an accident. It's not a crime. There's no intent. I didn't intend on seeing a person crossing the street and steer my car into them, Okay. If I hit someone in the streets, they stepped out or it was dark and they were walking on the side of the road, maybe they wanted a little close and I wanted a little close and I hit them or something, or I hit another car, it's an accident. It's not a crime unless they can prove that you intended on hitting that person. But they do this all day long. You know, a particular situation I talk about from time to time is a case where a woman has a child in the car and just goes into the store for a thing or two and wants to come back out. And they leave the child alone in the car, and it's a hot day. And as they go in and pick up a few things, they've lost in their mind or whatever, and next thing you know it, they're in there for an hour or more, and then they come back to the car, and the child is dead. And there's been cases. This woman didn't intend to kill their child. I think that's enough payment for them for what the stupidity of that person. I think the loss of their child is enough. They don't need to put that person in jail. But they do. They'll put that woman in jail. They have put that woman in jail. Okay? Yeah. You see, intent is the key to law. You have to have the intent to commit the crime. An accident is an accident. A mishap is a mishap. But people are in jail all day long. And the other thing, a point you brought up concerning the sheriff and people going to jail and so on and so forth, you know, look at, I tell sheriffs all the time, and the point, and we talk about it in the handbooks and everything, look at when these people send, when a town court or a village court, and in most cases a city court, sends people to the sheriff to go to jail, that sheriff should not accept that person and set them free. Why? Because they didn't have due process. You cannot get due process in a town court. You cannot get due process in a village court. And in most city courts, you cannot get due process. County courts, you can get due process. State courts, you can get due process. Federal courts, you can get due process. But not in those other courts. And you can find out the courts you can get due process in just by opening your constitution. And you look up the word in your constitution, your state constitution, you look up the word court of record. It's a phrase, court of record, two, three words. And if you look up and you run a search in your constitution, okay, you will find that they will list what a court of record is in their state. In New York State, a court of record is a county court, state court. Okay, the other courts are not courts of record. They can't give you due process. Therefore, they have no power, no authority to arrest or even to fine. Okay, but they do it all day long because we're stupid. We're all dumb.
They can't give you due process, or they won't.
They can't. They don't have the power or the authority to give you due process because they don't. Everything is statutory to begin with. Yeah. Any court that is moving statutorily is not giving you due process because statutorily you're guilty. Everyone's guilty. There is no possibility of not being guilty.
Oh.
So statutory courts can.
Oh man, that is so criminal. God.
Of course it is. And people don't know. People don't understand. But, you know, we.
Like they expect to get beat up, you know? I mean, I expect something to go wrong, you know, and then they're going to be in trouble. That's. Mm. But they're already in trouble because they don't know the law and they can't, you know, it's like idolatry. It's maybe that's because it's part of the Roman thing, you know, to worship, you know, anybody but God.
I mean, well, yeah, and that's what they're taught. These people, all these lawyers, and they didn't have a proper education before either anyway, and then they go to college and they get their minds fully corrupted altogether. They are taught that we are under, that the United States was created under the Rome fashion. We were not created under Rome. We were created under Israel. Our founding fathers were absolutely crystal clear about that. We are a Christian nation, and we were created and fashioned under the nation of Israel. Now, just because we have senators, okay, particularly the senators, I don't, you know, for some reason people think, well, okay, it has something to do with Rome, but they pulled the wool over the eyes of the people. So they claim we're fashioned under Rome, okay, and with civil law, civil courts, civil society, okay, and then they give us civil law, which is what they've taken common law and replaced it with civil law under the Rules Enabling Act of 1934. And so now we're under civil law, and they make the law We never gave the people that we elected powers or authority to make law. We gave them power and authority to make what is called positive law. It's called equity. And equity is legislative law. And the purpose of legislative law is to control commercial, in the case of the federal level, interstate commercial activity, and to control government agencies and the agents therein. And they've written 57 different codes in order to do that. And it was proper, okay, to do that, because that's the power and the authority we gave them. And we defined that power in Article 2, Section 8. We gave them 18 very specific powers. We did not give them the power to make law outside of equity, to control themselves in commercial activities. We didn't give them the power to control our behavior. We didn't give them the power to do all the... They do so much outside of the Constitution, and the people don't have a clue because they're ignorant to it. And if a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen.
You know, I believe that if more people knew that the law does not involve controlling someone's behavior, that there might be less rebellion. You know, like they'd have to take the
control.
You know,
have control over them. Just think about this, okay? Think about this. We are the lawmakers. We get that power and authority from God. It stems from, ultimately, from the Bible, and it was declared in the Declaration of Independence. We're under the laws of nature, and of nature's God, and we have government by the consent of the people, and that we, the people, are the lawmakers. We, the people, ordained. We, the people, established the Constitution for them to control them. And they are under the legislative law. They're under equity. We are under common law. And so we, the people, being the lawmakers, therein is the grand jury. Therein is the trial jury. Okay? The grand jury decides on whether they're going to indict or not. I mean, they pull their nose. They put a ring in their nose and they pull them along because they control the people, because we're real stupid, we are. Okay? And we just follow through with anything they say. But no, we got to be rebellious there. No, we don't think this is a thing that this person is liable for anything criminally. We're not going to indict. Go away. Take a hike. Leave us alone. Bring this case back to us no more. Okay? Then the other side of the coin is we do indict. Well, then the 12 people decide. And the 12 people that decide is supposed to decide not only the facts, but the law. Okay? And we can create that law right off the whim, right off the bench. Okay? But the law. And the penalty involved in the situation. And not necessarily putting them in jail. You know, if you have to put a ring on their leg in order to keep monitoring where they're at, maybe they should be under house arrest, maybe not. Maybe they can't leave a certain area. And then, of course, they need to pay restitution to the person they injured, because that's what it's all about. But what do the courts do? They incarcerate them. They make money off the incarceration through their SESQ accounts. Then after that, they give them fines. So when they come out, they got to pay a whole bunch of fines. But the person was injured. Thank you very much for coming in. Have a nice day. Don't come back no more. They get nothing. There's no restitution. There's nothing. Okay. The whole point of a court of justice is to restore the injured party. That's the common law. The people are ignorant to these things. How can they expect to be free if they don't know these things? How can they expect to be taking control of the government agents, the government people that they put into power and authority? How can they know how to take them and remove them out of office if they're not doing the job right according to the will of the people? Well, they have no clue about any of those things. They don't even know what the Declaration of Independence says. They don't even know what the Bill of Rights says. They don't know what the Constitution, what powers and authorities we gave to the court system, what powers and authority we gave to the administration, what powers and authority we gave to the legislators, and they don't know. So, yeah. I mean, it's they say we're a democracy. Well, wake up, people, because we are a democracy. Okay, that's what we are, a democracy. And a democracy will always self-destruct, and it'll be a violent self-destruction. Our founding fathers told us that. You won't find the word democracy anywhere in the construction of our Constitution. the Bill of Rights or the Declaration of Independence. I think it's I think it's number 10. Okay. Anyway, our founding fathers in debating the Constitution, they only put one long chapter into the Constitution concerning the democracy. And it was just nothing but, we want nothing to do with it. It'll only self-destruct, and it'll be violent in its self-destruction. And the people will always end up under an oligarchy. And we've been under an oligarchy all of our lives. They've seized control a long time ago.
Yeah.
So
for some reason, we have to keep that illusion going on for a short more time. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I get very frustrated. You know, but all these arrests, they're coming up in the mainstream media and stuff. They happened years ago. But I need to just be quiet and listen. Because, you know, I mean, there are people out there who are more ready to hear it. You know, I don't even know if I'm ready to hear anything. But, yeah, there's just the devolution. I don't know when that's going to complete its cycle, but...
Well, it's working through the system now. It's in a ready fashion. We may be able. Well, I don't think it's gonna. There's gonna be some violence in the street. It's not gonna. I don't think it's gonna be large. And Q says it's gonna be under control very quickly. Stay indoors when it happens. Okay. But it's the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers that people should read. Because it's in number, I'm pretty sure it's Federalist Paper number 10 that talks about the democracy, and that has nothing to do with us. Our founding father said there's not an inkling of democracy in the government that we gave you. We created a republic, and it's just common sense that you use a popular vote to elect an individual to represent you. It's just common sense. Okay, and we give them the powers and authorities that they can act upon. They can't go in and act upon their will. They debate the Constitution all the time. They try to get rid of the First Amendment. They try to get rid of the Second Amendment. They don't want you to even practice religion anymore, unless you're you know, if you're under the Quran or something. You know, I mean, that's okay to have in school, but the Bible, no way, you can't have that there. You know, we got major problems, and the problems is in the people at this point. That's what
I'm saying. Yeah.
Because it's available right now for them to take it back, but they're not doing anything. You know, I go to other rooms, okay, sometimes, and I listen to, you know, conversation going on, and you got the, you know, we don't have chat in this room. We can push the button and have chat in this room, and people can chat, okay? But it takes away from what we're talking about.
Yeah,
I go to other places and I see what's going on in the chat has nothing to do with being proposed in the audio, okay, in the voice part.
No.
And people are chatting about all kinds of stuff. No one's paying attention.
Right, right. That's and social media.
That's why we don't have that. We don't have chat in this room to start meeting. We shut it off.
Yeah.
So... in any event,
you know, I've been on this since last September, so I was thinking, you know, of course I don't know still, but it may take another year, but I'm confident that, you know, God's going to give me what I need to take care of the situation I'm in, or it's in His hands any way it goes.
The key, that's the bottom line of all things. All right, with that, I got to move on. I kept you on for a couple of reasons. Number one, you had good conversations. You brought up great things. I had a lot of opportunities to teach here, a lot of different things, and hopefully wake people up on things. And we only have one other person left. Nobody else is in the queue. So we'll give them the rest of the time unless someone else pops in. But thanks for the call, and I'm sure we'll talk to you maybe next week.
Yeah. Good night.
All right. Sulu, you got the mic. Let's see if I can get that next question. See, open the mic there.
Good evening, John.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. Thank you for your hard work and you know, and your caring for us. We appreciate all you do, and we'll try to support you as much as we can financially, and you know, so But I have a question because I have a friend that's going through some, she owes some taxes, I guess, it went through the state of Kansas. And somehow they took a few, you know, some off of her account without her, you know, knowing.
State tax or federal?
It's the state.
And what? And you? And you're in Missouri, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Have you looked into the state constitution on that?
It's a friend of mine that I was helping her with the taxes in the past. Because Minnesota came after her for 3 years, and they was trying to collect the taxes from her. And so I helped her, you know, with the affidavit. And then so that shut down, but then Kansas sent her some documents saying that she was owed $600-something for 2023.
Is she over 65?
Yeah, she's.
All right, well, anybody over 65 has certain protections that they don't realize it. I'm just learning about this myself. So she should look into this. When they claimed that she owed more taxes, how many years ago was it? You said 2022, I think, 2022?
Yeah, it was 3 years. It was 23, 22, and 21. So
was she over 65 and 21?
Yeah, that she was owing. So it comes to about almost 2,000.
Okay, and she, how old was she in 2021? Was she over 65 in 2021?
2021. I think she just turned 65 in 2024.
Okay, that could be problematic because that's before that. But nevertheless, because she's 65 now, there may be something about that. I don't have enough knowledge on it yet. It's something I'm just hearing about it. I heard some people talking about it, and they seem to be valid, knowledgeable individual, and I need to look more into it. And that's what she should be doing. You know, what protection does she have against taxes for a certain, for state taxes particularly? The other thing is I have never seen, for instance, I'm in New York, and I've never seen New York chase anyone for taxes. They have sent them letters telling people they owe money, this, that, or the other thing, but I've never seen anyone taken to court. And the main reason is, I think, is because everything funnels up to the federal and then back to the state. I think that's how it works. So if whatever tax taking out of your income, okay, your earnings, it's not really income is corporate, so you know your let's call it earnings, I guess, whatever money they're trying to take out of that or claim that you owe out of that, it would funnel up to the federal government, and the federal government then, however they work that out, funnels money back to the states. And so it's always been the federal government, but I've never seen any of the state ever chasing anyone for that kind of money. So she should look into the Constitution to see if there's anything there for that. There are some states that collect the state tax at all. Florida is a state that doesn't collect state tax. I think there's a couple of states, but I know Florida is one of them. And all those taxes are unlawful. Anyway, they can't really, again, ignorance is bliss. And if you go into court and you're ignorant, they say this, that, and the other thing, and lawyers aren't going to protect you well, and you're just going to be found guilty, and they're going to want the money if they took you to court. But if you can defend yourself by the knowledge of the law, okay, that's a whole different process. And the question is, how or what authority do you collect the tax? Where's the law? What are you doing? Find out. There's a law requiring a state tax, and by what authority that comes from, and you can make your argument. And you can always move.
And you know, she had a letter from Kansas, which is the attorney. One of the attorneys, is doing that. He sent that to her, and he was kind of like making a case out of it. And, you know, it was he put Leavenworth County Court and also, but the thing is, you know, there was nobody, you know, signed any of it. You know, he didn't even sign the, you know, the letter that he sent her.
Uh-huh. Well,
so, you know.
She only owes $2,000, right? Is she on Social Security?
I think she's receiving that now. I'm not mistaken, yep. You know, because she's a
Does she have any other income?
She worked part time with the one other store, like a paint store.
So she's working now part time on the books for a paint store. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's been working part time. I don't think she get like 8 hours a week. So you know, I mean 8 hours a day. So it's about like a couple of hours here.
When you retire at 65 or 64, and you can continue working and still receive your Social Security. If you're on disability, then you're only allowed to work so many hours or gets, you know, whatever that is on that. But as a person retired, you can continue to work and still collect your Social Security and your income, whether it's part-time or full-time. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that then, of course, is you got the tax problem. Now, the other thing is they have to do due process, and that's, what, they're just sending letters to her?
Well, yes, they did send a letter to her and, you know, make it look like there was a case filed in, you know, in the Leavenworth. But I look at the case number, you know, it's not for me like, you know, like it's normally, you know.
Unless she got a summons to go to court, there is no case. And
right. That's
something you can respond to. Any paper you get on taxes, whether it's state or federal, and I've never gotten a letter from the state ever. And the feds have been chasing me for many, many years, and I've just been just in head of the game. But in any event, you know, they can't prove anything on me. I don't want to get into the details. So, but the bottom line, on her situation, okay, is that she needs to let it be known, you know, what she's got to respond to the letter.
I did help her with the affidavit.
If the letter is stated in the case, then you got to let it be known, I never received a summons. And if I didn't receive summons, then I haven't been called into a court. And I haven't been called into a court, then there is no due process. I'll bet you dollars to donuts if you respond that way, they're just going to leave you alone. Because I don't think they really have the backbone or the ability to really go into the courts because it's too fugazi when it gets
there. Right. Yeah, I did, you know, I did help her with the affidavit, and she already sent it out. They received that, and I did mention that on there about the due process, and, you know, I told her to send
She needs to send a letter out making those points, particularly the fact that she's never been summoned into a court, so I have no idea what court cases you're talking about. What they're playing with administrative court, but even with that in administrative court, they still have to send some kind of a summons. And then you can get out of that because you're not going to agree to that, and it's not a court of law. They have no power to fine or incarcerate on those levels.
Right. Okay.
That's what I would do, and make sure that you send it out. Whatever you write, you want to write a paper that's notarized, you want to get two papers notarized, one you keep, one you send to them. You want to send it, you know, certified with a return signature, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that should shake some of the people up anyway, because then they know, at least they'll think. I think when I won my case against the IRS is because they were trying to figure out who I am, you know, because I had a lot of knowledge, okay, and I was able to stay one step ahead of the game on the one hand, okay,
mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I brought up Supreme Court rulings, I brought up law, I brought up all kinds of stuff, and you know, they just don't know. You got to keep them guessing on what your knowledge is and who you know. If you prove to them that you're ignorant, they're going to come out after you. So you got to be careful. It's something sophisticated, short and sweet, and get to the point. Deal with law, notarize it, certify it, and see, and make the point. You know, I've never received a summons, so send me a copy of that summons, by the way. You know, that's an ad. And that in itself might make them go away. Because
I know I had the same thing happen to me when I was in Kansas. I think it was shortly before they took my house. They sent me a letter saying that I owe I think it was $2,000 something. And so I fought that with the affidavit and
They took your house for $2,000?
Yeah.
Okay, what you need to do, how long ago was that?
Oh, that was, I think it was 2015.
Okay, don't worry about the statute of limitation, because in common law there is no statute of limitation, and I do believe that we have a good chance of getting common law back in the court. But you can then pursue that. You should look into the statistics and the papers on that to see what they sold the house for. They had to, first of all, they can't just take it and sell it. They have to put it up for auction. So you need to chase that down. And then when you find out that they sold the house for $50,000, well, where's my $49,000, my $48,000 after you've taken the $2,000 out? And then you sue them for that.
Okay.
That's to begin with. And if we're successful, and we're only going to be successful as if people behind us to get our common law back into the courts, and we are working diligently and have been doing diligently for quite some time now, to try to get the common law back into the courts. And
yes,
I think we're going to get it. I think we're going to get it this year. And it's important to get behind that. And if we succeed in that, then everybody who lost a home through tax foreclosure, you can take it into the courts, and we'll teach you how to win on that. What we'll do is do that now. We have to get common law into the courts first. And
yeah, we're praying for that. We've been praying for the common law. I believe it. Yes, like you say.
Also, even if your house was taken for foreclosure by a mortgage company, we can get your money back if we get common law back. Okay?
Right.
So
I did do a land patent on that, a new update land patent on the house. So
yeah, but you don't really need that. That I know people teach that. You don't necessarily need that. You have the description of the property to begin with, okay?
Right.
That's all you really need is to show the description of the property and the ownership originally, and that's basically it. They can play all their games with the title and the words in the title, and look at. If they can take your home away from you every year because you don't pay your taxes, then you don't own that home, do you? And that, of course, is fraud again, because they've led you to believe that you do own your home.
Right.
So
exactly.
Many and points that could be made and arguments that could be made and people can win. And when if they removed it through the mortgage, then they violated other laws, because they went through what's called non-judicial foreclosures. And they all do what's called non-judicial foreclosures. Even though they set up a facade, they pull you into the courtroom and the judge is there and all this other stuff, it's still a non-judicial foreclosure because there's no final declaration on the finality of that. And if it is, that's a higher state of fraud. Okay?
Right, okay.
So, again, these are things I wouldn't want to get into talking to people about in details until we get to back our courts of record.
Okay.
So with the other person in the queue, I want to take them. And if you want, we could talk some more next week.
Thank you. I appreciate it, John.
Thank you. Actually, look, someone else just stepped in. We got two. We'll try to take both of them. Okay. 702 number, what's your first name and your state? You got the mic.
Hey, John, it's Tara. I'm California.
How you doing?
I called in.
We only got a couple of minutes because it's late. I'm sorry, and we do have one other person, but go ahead.
Okay. I first jumped in, and I didn't. I don't know if my phone didn't register to get in there, but I waited. Anyway, I loaded up with stuff to talk about based on what you were talking about during the call, and I appreciate it. First thing I wanted to say is thank you for all your work, and I have gone through the website and all the emails I've been getting and looking at a lot of the links and studying your stuff, and I'm just amazed at your work and your knowledge and how you're sharing it and how you have patience with people. I can see, you know, getting really frustrated that there's not more people on board with this. And, you know, I'm sure you've been at this for a long time, and I don't know if you've seen it, you know, seen the needle move at all, or you've seen progress with it, but it often seems like we're just going backwards, you know, and I think some ways we are and some ways we're not, but I do appreciate your work, and I'm learning a lot, and there's still so much more for me to learn. But even on this call, just listening to the stuff you're saying is really valuable information, and I really appreciate it. I have so many questions and things I want to say, but I guess, you know, we'll keep it brief. I can call back next week and get back in. But
maybe we can cover one of the questions, and then next week just get in early and get in line. You know, I spent a lot of time with the first caller because there was really no one else in the queue.
Yeah, I thought I was in line, but I guess, you know, when I looked, for some reason it didn't register. But anyway, no worries. I think you were trying to make a point about Elon Musk, and I think that you may, I don't want to read your mind here, but I think what you were getting ready to say is, imagine being a trillionaire and not addressing these issues. Like, you know, with one swoop, being a trillionaire, and, you know, frankly, other these billionaires, they could change society so much for the better with just a few things.
Well, I do believe that if Musk becomes aware of us and looked at us, he'd support us. I do believe that. I think he'd give us a lot of money, and we would do amazing things with money because we'd be able to go professional. But we'll see what happens. I did recently send him a letter because I want to send him a couple of books, and I'm tired of sending books to people, and if they don't respond, and I don't know whether they're getting it or not because they got all these doorkeepers, and maybe they just don't give it to them, or they just throw it. I don't know what they do.
Yeah.
So I sent an email to Musk telling him a little bit about what these books are about, and led them to the website, him to the website, and the particular book, one book particular I'd like to send to him. And hopefully he'll get the message, he'll go out and look, and maybe that'll be the solution to our problem. But what I wanted to talk about was what Musk recently said concerning AI, and particularly AI, okay? And he said and he's a very intelligent guy, he's got his finger on the pulse, and I think he's got the most credibility to talk about this kind of a thing. And he says that 2030 will be the deadline. It's 80-20%. 80% will be able to control AI. 20%, we're going to lose everything, and AI will destroy the world. He was on. Goodness, who was he on with? I forget which podcast he was on with talking about this. So my point, AI, of course, is technology. Technology has led us to AI. AI is disruptive. It's destruction. It's evil. It's a major problem. And AI, of course, will never have a conscience because only a soul can have a conscience. So AI cannot have a conscience. But it could be destructive. It could come to conclusions because, look, AI is recreating itself. AI, you know, will eventually, if not already, is going to be building the robots themselves. AI can keep putting out all kinds of, and could put the wrong kind of information to it. Maybe we got to get rid of these carbon lives because it's destroying the world. You know, it could be a solution and a conclusion. I don't know. Not that it has a conscience. It's just that the information received. I've gone and I spent some time over the months. I get some good information from Grok. And I've asked Grok a lot of questions on different subject matters. And I always get the status quo answer. And I've had arguments with Grok. And at one point in time, Grok actually, you know, went the other direction. So I don't know what that's all about. I asked a question that I know I've never heard anyone know the answer to. The potential solution was something that I had come up with, and not that nobody else knows the answer. I'm sure there are people, but I haven't seen anything online. And I asked Grok, and Grok came with the proper answer. But I do know that Grok was, evaluating me for answering questions Rocket evaluated my website, went out and discovered my Bible studies and my my open forums and so on and so forth. Not with my permission necessarily, so, but you know, my conversation with the Rocket was a very long conversation, you know, because it was almost like an argument or a debate. And then Grok came back with all this information about me and knowledge and conclusions that I have, and so on. But still, Grok maintains the status quo, not that we're under common law, that we're under civil law, because that's the main feeding of what's out on the Internet. Grok can only give information received. And so,
right, it's all in how it's programmed. I mean, like, you know, you were making a point earlier, is that, you know, they took the morality, the Christianity, the morality. I mean, it doesn't, you don't have to be a Christian to have morality, but they didn't replace the religion with anything, so, except, you know, narcissism and hedonism. So we were left with, you know, these lack of, you know, moral consciousness in the education system. But you know, if they programmed AI for goodness, and, you know, it might be different, but that's not what they're doing, and we know that, you know, is that, yeah, they're just, you know, they're basically programming it for demise, to you know, basically outsource our whole, outsource humans.
Well, when the AI, what I discovered with Grok, for instance, I don't know that it's necessarily programmed to give me certain solutions, but you know, the majority of the of law, for instance, would be from the bar perspective, and from my perspective would be as far as Grok would be concerned, from research and the Internet, and they do it. It does it very quickly. Okay, from their perspective, I would be a sovereign citizen, and a sovereign citizen identified as a cop killer. Okay, that. The solution and the conclusion and the answers that Grok will give. Okay, I've asked biblical questions, I've asked historical questions, I've talked about the law particularly, and it's always status quo, always.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes it's even a waste of time just to run through it. It's like you're like, yeah, I could have answered that myself. You know, I mean, I know that's true with ChatGPT a lot. I mean, it has a nice organization of thoughts. You know, it puts it in a nice way, but it's still stuff that you already knew, or that, right, you know, you could just.
Well, I still
find
get
out
a lot of. It depends on how I ask the question, and I give restrictions, and then I get a lot of good stuff out of it, even in history too. You know, but I'm very careful, you know, with what they have to say about history, because history has been altered so much. But nevertheless, I've had problems that, you know, I had to get very specific answers to. You know, it could have been something that is an engineering problem, a mechanical problem, situation with my car, or so on and so forth. I'd give the details and pop, right there, go out and be able to fix it, don't have to go to a mechanic or anything, of course, to some degree, you know. And so a lot of different problems, it has some good things you can get from it, let's put it that way. You just have to be careful. Also, Grok is very wordy, okay, they give me way too much information. And so I have to limit it often. I'll say, you know, with 30 words or less, or 50 words and less, bullet points. Sometimes Grok would respond to me and say, well, I gave you 35 instead of 30 because I just couldn't answer. So I accept that, of course. But the thing is you got to control it. And you have to be careful how you ask the questions and govern it to a certain degree. That in itself might sound a little difficult, but if you play with it, really, you'll figure that out, depending on what you're looking for. I mean, again, if you're looking for law, it's going to be problematic. If you're looking for history, it's going to be problematic. If you're looking, you know, even what Grok came back to me to say when I made the argument on being under common law and referred Grok over to the Declaration of Independence, the laws of nature, and nature's God, it still came back with a rejection of that conclusion. Okay? I forget what the answer was. I should take my conversations with it and make a book out of it, to be honest with you. Maybe one day if I find
Buddha,
you know.
Let me ask you this, John. So when you say they switched it from common law, the civil law, and, you know, I hear you say they, and, you know, we all do it. I do it too. But they, who are you referring to when, you know, who are these usurpers of our culture and our Constitution? Who is they?
Well, ultimately, it is the New World Order. The controls of the New World Order within every country ultimately is the deep state. Every country has.
Can you be more specific? Like, I mean, can you name names or names?
In the United States, it's the Democrats and the rhinos, particularly the Republicans. And we've had a few good Democrats that came over to our side. They kept the Democrat name, I think. For instance, Kennedy, is one. But in any event, basically, it is the Republicans that have woken up and have gotten behind Trump, to protect and to argue against the other position. The Democrats are totally lost. What people need to understand is where the Democrats come from. The Democrats come from the Federalists. The Federalist was the first political party to create what's called the factions, and which is political party, And they mostly came from the South, where slavery was, and their big argument is to maintain slavery. It's important that slavery was maintained in this country because that divides the people, and it'll become our demise ultimately. So they had to maintain it. They had to maintain it from an economic position, so they thought anyway, because especially down
south. And it also perpetuates
tobacco.
That's one of the main things. Is the existence of it in itself is an affront to human nature. So they have to keep that going because it furthers the rest of their agendas, which are anti-human.
Right. But the point is they maintained it for a number of reasons. And one of the main reasons it was maintained is to create division. And so what happened is that the federal and Washington was really upset with this whole thing, and all our founding fathers were, because they were dividing the people through factions. And when the word that they're using is faction is parties, political parties. And so they created this political party called the Federalists. And in 1801 or 1819, very early in 1800s, the Federalists morphed into the Democrat Party, And the Democratic Party has always maintained slavery, And it's very strange that when you think about it, because most black people are Democrats, not understanding, realizing it was them. The Republican Party was ultimately created by a group of people in the 1860s or late 1850s, the first Republican president was, of course, Abraham Lincoln. And the main purpose of the Republican Party was to go up against, to get rid of the slavery. And you can read what Lincoln had to say. We wrote about him in one of the memorandums concerning slavery and our founding fathers and slavery, which you can get up on our website. What they did is they wanted to... Lincoln believed it was... that God has set him forward to get rid of slavery in this nation. He believed that our founding fathers had set the stage in such a way that some person in the future would be able to get rid of slavery in this nation. Thomas Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, they claim he's a contradiction. They said he was a slave owner, that he bought slaves, and this, that, and the other thing. And all of that is a lie, because Thomas Jefferson never bought a slave in his life. Never. He served two sessions in the legislators for Virginia. And in both times, he went in trying to get slavery abolished in Virginia. The second time, he came in and tried to at least get it where you can liberate your slave, because it was illegal to liberate a slave. If you wanted to get rid of your slave, you had to sell him. Jefferson said that his first moments in his mind of consciousness was in the arms of a black woman, of a slave. And he grew up in that, and he always had compassion for them. If you read, there's a book out there called The Real Thomas Jefferson. It's an amazing book. You can get that from UCC. What is it? I'd have to go look it up in my bookshelf's on the other side of the room here. But in any event, maybe next week, if you ask, I'll tell you. But he tried to get to end slavery in his day. Our founding fathers all came to the realization slavery was not formed by we the people, wasn't formed by the Constitution, wasn't part of course, the original 13 colonies to become the 13 states. But again, it was a Southern problem. And that's why they created the three-fifths. There was a compromise of the three-fifths of a person. And so because Jefferson couldn't free his slaves, then he refused to sell them. And he kept them. And you can read in the real Thomas Jefferson, there are some of the people that were slaves that talked about Thomas Jefferson. They loved him. And he treated them very well. They had access to everything he had access to and created. He had a workshop. They built everything they needed. They had food. They had housing. Everything. So they probably did out a lot better being with Jefferson than they would have being outside in the world. But the bottom line was he was always against it. And then, of course, he wrote the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. We're created as by our Creator with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Okay? Now, Lincoln comes up, and he discovers that he believes that his purpose of life, in life at that point in time, was that he became the president to free the slaves. History rewritten will tell you different, but that is the fact. The whole thing was all about slavery, okay? And because it was an economic problem, and of course he succeeded in this, but then they kept the black people on the plantation, so to speak, through the Democratic Party, you know, and they've always been, you know, it's always been the Democrats that were just maintaining this whole process, this whole thing.
I think somehow they've lumped in Democrats with, like, free. Somehow you're more liberal and you're more free and you have more choices. And somehow they really convoluted the definition of a Democrat. And, yeah, like you said, the majority of black people are Democrats. And,
right. And
a lot of people are, you know, that would be against this stuff.
Look, at every time they get people into office, but they're waking up now. I don't know if you noticed that. They're waking up. I mean, they're upset with Obama. They see what Obama has done. I mean, there's all kinds of problems. He never did anything for the black people.
I mean, Trump has done more for blacks than Obama ever did.
Yeah, Trump has done a tremendous amount of work for black people and continues to do so. And there's a lot more. I was looking for a chart. I thought I left it on my desktop. I don't see it here, and I was looking at another. Maybe next week I'll pull it up. I copied a chart off of a program which laid out the Communist Party, the Nazis, and the Democrat Party, and they were all in line on every single point across the board. It was really an amazing point to see, in this chart. Because these people are just totally out of control. They're wacky. They've been put in power because of their belief system, because they've been cheating for probably as long as I've been alive, but more so the past 30 years than ever, maybe. So these people shouldn't even be in power. I don't believe majority is for any of them, and yet they are in Congress. You got all these Democrats. I think there's going to be a big, big changeover in this next coming election. I think it's going to be really a storm across this nation, moving towards the Republican elections, and we're going to get a lot of business done. So
you think so? I'm positive. I don't know. For some reason, I'm not seeing that, but I mean, I hope you're right.
Well, I'll tell you why, because they don't have enough people to vote them into office. They've been cheating all this time. And
yeah, well, with the illegals, and you know, that's so obvious. And I'm glad they're uncovering this stuff with the voter fraud. And I mean, I hope that
these millions and millions of illegals, when they came in and they're brought in, look, they're given money, they're given cards, they're given a place to live, they're given medical services, and on return, they need to go vote. and they need to go vote for Democrats. You see, that's the major problem. The other thing is they create these things, ballots, okay? And they also work with other countries outside, especially, there were problems coming down with, down from South America, even from China, okay? Venezuela was a problem, but not so much anymore, of course, but there was a problem, and they were cheating into our elections, working with the different systems. These machines, when you count the votes in private, you know there's a problem. I remember seeing in Chicago, especially in the presidential election, when Trump had lost, they were putting up these things on the windows so people couldn't even look in. The elections...
We just had an election in L.A., and there was a front runner. His name was Spencer Pratt. No, I'm not, I don't know that much about him, but it seemed like most people wanted him to win, and he had the most sensible platform. And the other two women were they were laughably bad. They were laughable.
Well, I think that's going to change. That's being looked at right now.
They got in based on, the late ballots. A week later, they decide, a week later, they call it, it was after it originally been called, then they reversed it. Oh, the mail-in ballots, all that. It's the brazenness of it and the insanity of it, and they get away with it. Who would vote for Karen Bass, who basically set the city on fire? And, who in their right mind would vote for her? Now, I know a few people did, like Magic Johnson endorsed her. Some people did. I don't know why or how. But, there's a lot of people that do things that are against their own interests. That's part of the problem of our education system is people have been engineered to work against themselves and then call themselves martyrs. Somehow that it's unbelievable.
You have 20% of the people, in my opinion, okay, that are just stupid. Okay.
Yeah.
And on top of that, you have people that
sick,
are
to be sick and stupid. They're stupid because they're sick in some physical way.
I've spoken to people who have no clue on what's going on at all, yet they think they do because they listen to CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN. Okay, and all those people, I do believe, and I hope. That they will be jailed, these people, these news people, for aiding and abetting, okay? Because that's what they've been doing. They've been destroying our whole system with the fake news. And I hope they're all going to jail. I really do. And I think there's a good possibility that a lot of them will be going to jail. But nevertheless, okay.
If they don't hold these people responsible, we're a lost nation. If the morality is so gone that these people get away with these high crimes of destroying a nation, then we don't have a nation. So they have to do time. They have to go to prison. That's another thing, a weird, crossover with the Trump administration and a lot of these pedophiles in the Epstein group. It's like none of them have been held accountable. Not one of them has gone to jail. No, nobody has lost their job because of it.
Some time. Look at the wheels of justice operate slowly. It's not like what they would do immediately move things forward and next thing you know, people are being prosecuted. No. They go through it because the whole thing's a sham on their end. But the bottom line is there has to be an investigation. It has to be a proper investigation. You got to have a lot of evidence. You got to go to get a grand jury. And then you have to get that indictment from the grand jury. And then you have to plan the process. And there's so many cases. This is a huge, huge conspiracy. Huge. We're talking, I would think, close to 1 million people, if not more, that are involved in this that are going to go to jail over all of these things that we're talking about. And so that's going to take a lot of time. And they've been working on this. He's been working on this ultimately going back to the beginning and even from his first administration that he's been working on this. So a lot of these indictments and stuff have gone through. There have been a lot of people that have been arrested. We're not hearing about it. There's a lot of the CEOs of corporations that... have left their jobs or have been indicted. So there's a lot of things going on. It's the big wigs that we're waiting for. And there's probably about maybe a dozen of them, big name people, who need to be arrested. And that can't happen too soon. It's got to be planned at a right time. I think that time is coming up because the people have to be primed about it. And you see a lot of this stuff on social you know, the social medias. I mean, I don't go to much of it, but, you know, I hear things from my son and other people. There seems to be a big turn against the Democrats, a big turn against these people that were the major Democrats, Obama.
Well, all their cities are a mess. I mean, all the worst cities, they have the worst problems. I mean, they're disgusting hellholes, and they're all Democratic cities. People
they got,
can't ignore it anymore. People's lives are such a mess. Because they've been stolen from and given them to, given stuff to the illegals. Meanwhile, they've got nothing.
Right. Well,
I mean, you can't ignore it anymore.
They got the guns. They got the controls. Okay. And also the people are ignorant. They don't know. They don't have a proper education. The government didn't give it to them. They should have been given to them, but they didn't give it to them. The people have to be given to them by the people. They're in National Liberty Alliance.
I want to mention something to you before I forgot, because I'm the first caller. You guys were talking about school, and I just heard. I've been studying about. LA Unified School District. They're losing students. It's not from the illegals being sent home. It's people are pulling their kids out of these schools and they're homeschooling way more than ever. Like they're having trouble even. You know, like the schools are having trouble retaining students because. They're so lousy, and people are pulling them out of the school. I mean, the vaccine mandates, you couldn't even get a religious exemption. That's against the law. I mean, they were blatantly breaking the law, and people were just going along with it for so long. But eventually they got fed up, and there's a lot of parents are now homeschooling a lot.
I know Trump was pushing forward for the idea of let the money follow the child. And if the child, I think it was something like the average cost for a child to go to school every year is like, let me see, what was that number? It was a big number. I don't remember what that number was, but it was a big number. And I know he was pushing for, I don't know if you got to go through Congress for this, I'm sure he does. But he was pushing for let the money follow the child. So if you can take your child and put them into a private school and move that money to pay for it in that private school, which would be more than enough because they give so much money in these public schools, then all these public schools would start falling apart to begin with. Also, if the child is going to be homeschooled, let that money go to the parents that's homeschooling their children.
Right. Exactly, the communities, the people, neighborhoods are getting together, families and communities are getting together and just, you know, they're hiring their own teachers, you know, and pulling their money together and doing it. And that's so much better.
I saw the number $18,000 or $19,000 per child. Okay, I think it was $18,000 and change. And so,
I mean, you go in these public schools, they literally stink. I mean, they stink.
Absolutely, absolutely. But if
and they haven't been changed since when they were built in the 20s and 30s, and maybe even before that. I mean, with all the bombs that they dropped and all this nonsense that they do all over the world with these wars and this nonsense, we could have rebuilt our school system 50 times over. It's just unbelievable. You've got to know that they're doing this on purpose.
I think the opportunity is here, but then getting a proper education is another thing. I am not aware, because we homeschooled our children. Okay.
Wow,
I'm not aware of a school.
I think it used to be illegal to homeschool.
Well, it might have been. I don't know, but we did ours and
good. That's great.
Growing up, but the thing is that homeschooling a child, is not as difficult as people might think, because you get the curriculum, you get a teacher's handbook. I mean, it's very simple, really. There's with the computers, you can do a lot of stuff on the computers. You can even do assistance on the computers with some of these programs where people will help you. But the thing is that I haven't found any curriculum anywhere that really teaches who we are as a people. The fact that we're a Christian nation. They don't teach civics. They don't teach the Constitution. They don't teach, government by the consent of the people. Okay, those are things that seem to suffer. I don't know if there's a. I haven't been able to find. I never found a curriculum that teaches those particular things. A little bit about those things, but nothing really sufficient that a child should need and use and have every single year being built up. Every child, when they come out of 12 years of school plus K, they should know the law, they should know how the court system works, they should know everything about who they are as a people, they should understand where our law comes from, and they should understand...
We should be able to be our own lawyers. That's the thing. We should be educated to the point where we don't need lawyers and we could represent ourselves
We'll always need lawyers. The problem is we don't want bar lawyers. No, there are certain things like in equity. Equity requires lawyers, okay? These people, for instance, let's take USC 3, I think it is, okay? Let me make sure it's USC 3. I think it is USC 3. Yeah, USC 3 controls the president. There's like 1,000 pages of law on the powers and the authorities of the president. And this is what a lawyer in equity, they should, if they're going to, if that's their specialty, to advise the president of the law, what his powers and what his authorities are lawfully, that's needed. Okay, because you can't expect the president to be a lawyer in that area. And it's the same thing with many other things. You know, the armed forces, you need the law, the Coast Guard, you need law, highways, and so on and so forth. You know, all these USC codes, these US codes. And so lawyers are definitely required there. They're required in administrative...
Specialized things that most people don't have the time or interest to study deeply, then yeah, right. But for our basic, you know, like...
And when it comes to the law of the land, the common law, okay, which is the law of the people, that's God's law, laws of nature and of nature's God, then that's what the people should know and learn in their school. By the time they come out, yes, we should all be lawyers. You know, I did send my youngest boy went to a Christian school. We went there for kindergarten and grade 1 and grade 2. We lost the principal and we pulled him out because the whole school changed at that point. And we were homeschooling my daughter at the time. So, but in any event, when he went to school in first grade and second grade, he was required to get up on a stage to give a speech or to sing a song. They weren't required to sing, but it's something on a stage. So they were to speak to the public, to do public speaking. That all should be part of education. You know, a lot of people are shy. I mean, I had a tough time being able to go up before people and give a speech or, you know, have some kind of a presentation and so on and so forth. It took me a while. I was very nervous and so on, but you get used to it. And if you get used to it when you're a child, that's the best way. So children should be learning that. But you'll always still need lawyers that understand the common law. Again, not bar attorneys, but common law, to be able to deal with people that are totally unable to take care of themselves. For instance, maybe a child that doesn't even have parents, okay? You know, they need to be taken care of legally somehow. But it should be under the common law. And some people maybe that...
And it's going to be so expensive where people can't afford them. I mean, these lawyers charge $500 an hour for nothing.
That's a whole different story. That's a whole different story.
I mean, it's not even... I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. It seems like a...
I have a paper. I need to look it up, and maybe I'll put it up online. I have a paper, you know, from my mother. I had a paper from a lawyer and a bill for things that the lawyer did for my mother, legal things. And on the bill, it made a mention of something, and it made $8. And another mention of something, $4.50. And the bill came to something like $28-$30, okay? And that was the work of a lawyer doing a whole bunch of things, okay? But today, you're right, it's insane. They all want they all want to become millionaires in a case. You know, they want $300-$400 an hour. Then, and they're not worth no $300-$400 an hour.
And their success is based on how much money they make, not what they do for the people. That's the thing too. It's a money competition amongst them. It's who makes the most money. That's how they measure their success.
Absolutely, all about money. Listen, we got to close. I'm looking at the clock. It's 11:30, and time to close down. We'll talk again. Okay.
I'll call in another time. Thanks again, John. Thanks. You're doing great work, and I'm learning a lot, and I appreciate you a lot.
All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next week. Good night. See if we can find the buttons now.